For Unfolding Slow Motion Apocalypse and Abe and Joe Take Your Calls. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Afro Gallery, presenting The Ides of March, a pop-up on Sunday, March 15th, featuring local artists and authors, including Weird, the Zymoglyphic Museum, local artists Hello Kitska, Happy Fangs, and Hesher Park, and artist and author Stephen Leiba reading from his new memoir, We Are All Indians Now. More information is available online at afrogallery.com.
Good morning.
Good morning. Everybody wash everything right now.
Yeah, that's pretty good advice, actually.
Yeah, actually it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alcohol, you know, pour it in your eyes, whatever. It might sting, but hey.
You delivered it in that faux panicked voice, but it's true.
No, it is actually true.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. My name is Abe. By the transitive power of show naming, that is Joe.
I'm Joe. And we're all going to die.
Property.
We're all going to die.
Eventually, yes. But don't do that.
Why not?
Because. That's just alarmist.
Well, yes, it is.
There's every reason to be alarmed, but there's no reason to panic. And hopefully we're going to drive that point home today.
Okay.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Oh, thank you. See, but you're not helping when you say,
no, I can't help you because we got an insane president.
Yeah, it's true. We do.
Okay. But I shouldn't be alarmed?
You should be alarmed, but you should not panic. Again, that distinction.
I'm not sure I understand
the
distinction.
It's a fine point, but a poor one.
Okay. I'll agree that it's a fine point.
Okay.
Well, fine.
Would you agree that there's a difference between constructive caution and outright panic?
No.
Okay, then. All right, you just go. Just let me do the show. All right, there's an awful lot going on today. Awful lot going on today.
There's an election today.
There's an election today. There's some environmental stuff going on. But let's start with infectious diseases.
Yeah, what a clever idea.
The novel coronavirus originated in central China, first announced by the Chinese government on 31st of December 2019.
That's true.
Has now spread to nations around the globe, including here in the United States.
Oh, no, we don't have that.
Oh, we just most definitely do. So the question is, should you be alarmed? Yes, you should.
Okay.
Should you take reasonable precautions? Yes, you should.
Yeah, wash your hands whenever you're not doing anything else.
Right. Should you go into a panic? No, you should not. Panic obscures good judgment. Panic forecloses the number of options you're able to perceive. Panicking leads to behaviors like hoarding and other irrational responses.
I just got some Purell. I got a whole box of it.
Oh, did you?
I stashed it in the basement.
Do you bathe in it? Do you fill up the tub?
I bathe in it, and my partner objects, but I ignore her objections.
Just let that image sit with you there, listeners, for a little while. Okay. The novel coronavirus is a member of the same broad family of viruses that produces such things as influenza and the common cold.
Yeah.
The problem is with the coronavirus, and if you've been paying attention, you know this, so forgive me, please, if I go over some territory here you already know.
Can't say it too often.
It is very easily transmissible.
Yeah.
And it is far more lethal than the flu. Especially for older folks or people with chronic disease, particularly chronic respiratory disease.
Yes.
And those with compromised immune systems.
Yes.
It is no joke.
Yes.
And this is why.
Well, I'm not going to give up on the joke.
Well, no. But the subject itself, the facts of the matter, it's no joke.
No joke.
That said, the lethality is quite high compared to the flu. We don't know exactly where it is. Some estimates have ranged from around 1% to the World Health Organization that places the lethality at around 3.4%.
That's really high. You know, it was about 1% for the last time we had a huge epidemic back in after World War One,
of the Spanish flu.
Yeah,
different disease.
Yeah.
Yeah, but lower lethality.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. Why was the Spanish flu so devastating?
Why? Oh, I know why, but go ahead.
Yeah, even adjusting for differences in gulfs in knowledge between then and now, gulfs in treatment and so on, it was so lethal because it was so communicable. It spread to a lot of people, and even at a relatively low lethality rate, if your disease spreads to a lot of people, you're going to have a lot of people die.
Well, and there was a war.
And
right. Ships going back and forth full of troops in crowded conditions.
Yes, indeed. So those things are problems as well.
Yes.
But here's the thing to remember. We don't know exactly what the lethality rate is, but you're safe in presuming that it's significantly higher than either than the influenza virus. So that you should take precautions if you are somebody with a compromised immune system, if you are somebody with chronic respiratory condition or other chronic disease that might make you less able to fight off a serious infection.
So drink some Purell.
Right. Drink some Purell. The math on this is what you need to bear in mind. If the lethality rate of the coronavirus is, in fact, in the neighborhood of 3.4%, as the World Health Organization estimates, that's really high.
I don't think people understand what that implies. I mean,
here's exactly what that means. If a million people in the United States are infected with the coronavirus, which is something that's entirely within the realm of possibility, that means that around 34,000 are going to die. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Okay. The problem here is that the vast majority of people who contract the disease are either going to be asymptomatic or are going to display very mild symptoms, like, you know, you got the sniffles or I got a little bit of a cough or something. Meanwhile, they are communicable and they're quite capable of passing the disease on to others who may or may not be able to, may or may not be able as well protected as the person who passed it on. So this is why we need to be so cautious about this.
Yeah.
Now, I've seen a lot of people out there saying, and I want to put a dagger in the heart of this fallacy right now. What are people worrying about? It's just like the flu. No, it's not just like the flu. And here's what's wrong with that argument. There's a couple reasons why. First of all, even if it were just like the flu, it's something new. And it is possible to be concerned about two possible sources of danger at once. Is it not?
Oh, I think so.
Right. Secondly, that's just plain false. It is not like the flu. Symptomatically, it might be, but it's killing a lot more people, which means the social isolation protocols that are showing to be effective in places like China and South Korea and Japan are very important to observe in the case of a widespread outbreak.
And Italy.
Or there's some evidence to suggest that they needed to impose those protocols sooner than they did.
Oh, yes.
Indeed. Now, there's also another concern for those of us in the United States and in other liberal Western nations. And that is the types of systemic responses that are proving effective in China right now probably will not be tolerated by Westerners. I've read some reports of people living right now in these under these protocols in places like Shanghai. For example, every time I read a gentleman's account, every time he moves in and out of his particular neighborhood, there's been a perimeter established by security forces. His temperature is taken every time he goes into and out of his neighborhood. He is his building in which he lives only admits people who live there. Every time he goes to the grocery store, his temperature is taken at the grocery store. There is a mandatory face mask policy for anybody who's displaying any sort of flu-like symptoms. And these are all measures that we would consider to be draconian here in the West and are likely not to observe. So we are inherently at a higher risk of transmitting this disease culturally than places like China.
Yeah, freedom has its price.
Freedom ain't free.
Yeah. No, and an important thing about the masks. The masks do not protect the person wearing the mask. The mask essentially protects people around you.
Yeah.
Because the virus itself can go through the mask, but because most of what comes out of your nose and mouth is fluid, it'll be blocked by the mask.
Yes.
And this is an important thing to understand.
This is an important thing to understand. Also, an important thing to understand is that this this virus accumulates mostly upon surfaces. It doesn't. It's not a pathogen like the measles, for example, that remains suspended in the air for long periods.
Measles
of time.
Is much more contagious.
Much more contagious. Now, please bear in mind that I am not a trained health professional, and that you should really, if you want definitive answers on these things, turn to people who have those definitive answers. And those people are the Centers for Disease Control, although I want to put an asterisk there that we're going to get to in a second.
Yes.
The Oregon Health Authority and the World Health Organization.
Yes.
Go there for your answers.
And I have to remind people, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Mm-hmm. And this is a show in the time of plague. 231.
Is that like love in the time of cholera?
Yes. Oh, very okay. Close. 231-8187.
Now, there's another thing we need to think about here. I just mentioned how the fact that we live in a liberal Western democracy is going to preclude some of these more totalitarian methods of social isolation I just described.
Yes.
Also compounding our problem here is it with the chief executive of the United States is actively spreading disinformation about this.
Yeah, and he's crazy.
And he's crazy.
Let's say this. Let's make it sure everybody understands this. There's not a choice now because this guy is crazy.
Indeed. Within the last week, the President of the United States has appeared on Sean Hannity's TV show.
Another crazy guy.
Downplayed the risk of the virus, as he has from the very beginning. Claimed that he has a gut feeling, a hunch, that the lethality rate is not 3.4%, as the WHO has determined. But in his gut, tells him that it's less than 1%. And really, if people are feeling bad, they should just go ahead and go to work, because they're going to get better.
Sooner or later, or die.
Right. Now, I want you to
or
think about
others.
Pause and reflect now on just how galactically irresponsible.
Galactically?
Yes. I was looking for a really big adjective.
Okay.
You like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Galactically irresponsible.
Yeah.
I suppose it might
That's
be
big.
An average.
That's
I
big.
Don't know.
Really big.
Yeah. We're talking if the lethality rate is even close to the 3.4% estimated by the World Health Organization, the fact that the president is spreading disinformation like this means that thousands of more Americans are going to die than needed to die because of this.
Just to be clear, I may have said this earlier, but it's really important to understand. The worst flu epidemic we've ever had was the one following World War I, and it had only a 1% mortality rate.
Right. But again, as we said before, the ease of transmission is what makes those lethality numbers really stack up. And by all indications, this virus is very easily transmitted.
Yeah.
So what does this mean for your everyday life? Well, you want to make sure that you wash your hands. Hand washing, the single greatest medical innovation in human history.
Really? I think it actually almost
true.
Is.
Yeah. It is. Wash your hands all the time, more often than you think you need to do, for about 20 seconds at a time, interlacing your fingers, getting under your fingernails. And if it helps to have a little mnemonic device to, you know, get you through that 20 seconds, you can recite, sing a little song, recite something. I found that the out, damn spot from Lady Macbeth is about 20 seconds, which is a really great
Did
one.
Did you really check it out?
No, well, I found it, and then I recited it and timed it, and it's about right, yeah.
Also, happy birthday to you twice.
Okay, happy birthday to you twice.
Yeah.
Also, the Litany of Fear from the Dune novels. That's my personal favorite. You can recite that one.
I don't
fear,
know that.
Fear is the Mind Killer. Oh, you should look it up. It's awesome.
Okay.
You can recite that while you watch
it. I've always thought Dune was kind of a book.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Okay, we're not going to get along.
Oh, my God. All right. Oh, my God. All right. So these are the things you can do. You can clean surfaces in your home. You can avoid bodily contact with people. So give them the Vulcan live long and prosper salute instead of a handshake, you know.
That is really creepy.
It isn't. It isn't.
It's television.
How many sci-fi franchises are you going to defame, sir?
Every single one as they appear.
Okay. Avoid bodily contact with people. Avoid being in sealed environments with large numbers of people.
Well, wait a minute. We're in a sealed environment.
Yeah, but it's just you and me.
Oh, great!
And I'm young and healthy. So
don't you have little children?
I do. Children,
germs.
Children seem to not be in one of the high risk categories.
No, but they carry it.
Yeah, they carry it. Absolutely. But children carry absolutely every pathogen known to humanity. So
right.
That's not much of a change.
No.
So clean the surfaces. Avoid being in sealed conditions with large numbers of people. Probably want to avoid air travel if at all possible.
Oh, don't fly. Yeah,
don't take a cruise.
No, yeah, really. Don't take a cruise unless you have nothing to lose.
If you want to be in a floating death trap, by all means, take a cruise. Otherwise, don't. Don't take a cruise. Now, we mentioned the crazy president. Last week, the Centers for Disease Control had a recommendation they were prepared to issue, which was elderly people and people with compromised immune systems should avoid jet travel. The White House, the president...
You know, everyone should know that a jet, if somebody eats an onion in the upper class compartment, you smell it in the cheap seats.
Yeah, thank you for that.
It's true.
That's remarkably illuminating, given the
context.
Well,
it's a good example.
Okay. Now... The CDC was ready to say seniors and immunocompromised people don't get on the plane. The White House muzzled that.
Why?
Reportedly because the president did not want to see a downturn in air travel.
Too late.
Yeah. So, again, galactically galactically irresponsible.
You really like the sci-fi references.
I do, but think about this, Joe. Is this not manslaughter? Or at the very least, reckless endangerment? Criminal negligence? What the president's doing?
But yeah, but
people are going to die.
You can't blame him. He's insane.
I can blame him.
He's insane.
He's occupying the highest office in the land. I can blame him. And okay. I do.
All right.
His position and his utterances since the beginning of this outbreak have been nothing short of incredibly irresponsible, reckless, and dangerous, and in my opinion, criminal.
I have to say something that's going to anger a lot of our listeners.
Uh-huh.
It no longer matters about whether or not we have a national health care. It no longer matters who we have as president. We have to get rid of this crazy man this time.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And we're going to segue to that subject in a little while.
Oh, okay.
So in the face of a very fast-moving, quite lethal pathogen, we have a leadership that is entirely unprepared and apparently unwilling to address the fact, the facts of the case, nor are they willing to speak to us as if we're reasonable adults.
Did you know that he wanted to keep that cruise ship offshore so that it wouldn't add to the numbers?
Indeed.
I mean, this guy's crazy.
Right. The president only bestirred himself to speak about this outbreak when it became clear that it was having an effect on global trade and more specifically on securities markets. Once the stock market started to take a nosedive, then the president was up in arms. And it has been speculated that his reticence to talk about this is because he doesn't want to disrupt commerce or the economy at all.
Too late.
Because I think he realizes that without good unemployment numbers, he's really got nothing. Nothing. So, again, incredibly irresponsible, reckless, and even criminal.
Yes.
Yeah. 503-231-8187.
We got callers.
Is the number to call. Let's go to the phones. Chris, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'm wondering about your comment on the death rate, measuring it against other flus and whatnot.
No, just measuring it against the most famous flu epidemic in the history of the United States and the
right.
world.
Yeah, exactly. And that flu, we know the death rate on that one. Mm-hmm. Because the epidemic went through its total stages. You know, in other words, mm-hmm. we know the number of people who were infected. In this case, with so many asymptomatic people that they obviously miss, we don't know the death rate, really.
Yes.
We know it as of now, but once it completes itself, it's going to be much, much lower than 3%. It's not going to stay at that level.
Well, we don't know that, but I understand your point.
You see, you know, I mean, we just don't. You're measuring a small sample against what's going to be a huge sample.
Only because we only so far have a small sample, and we don't have a. We actually have larger samples in China and in Japan and Korea and so on.
Well, look at the totals. Have you seen? I mean, they're only in the thousands, so still. We're talking about.
So what do you say? I'm not quite clear what your point is. I'm being alarmist?
Said,
is that the idea?
You emphasize the 3.4% as if that's going to be what happened.
But I also took
34,000 deaths out of a million.
I also took note to say that we don't know. I also took care to say that we don't know what the final lethality statistic will be.
Okay. Well, then, I mean, you shouldn't have actually made that example. That's only point.
No. I'm not sure you're quite understanding the point. We're not being alarmist. We're looking at what has statistically in the past been accurate estimations of things that go bad. So it's not. We're not coming out of some kind of crazy place. We're coming out of a place which has a historical precedent, and that's all we can do because we haven't yet seen the end of this.
Yeah, but you would recognize what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, I understand your point.
It's probably going to be much lower than that.
No, it's probably not. We don't know what it's going to be. That's more legitimately your point, I think.
Well, yeah.
We don't know that it's going to be lower or higher. We don't really know.
Right, but we don't know that it's going to be 3.4 either, right?
Okay.
Yeah, we don't know that it's going to be 3.4.
No, for all we know, it could be three people tomorrow and never again.
And here's part of the reason why we don't know the lethality right now, or the reason we don't have a more accurate take on it.
Right.
And that is, we need to know, in order to determine how lethal a pathogen is, we need to know, first of all, how many people have it, and then we're able, and then by figuring out how many people have died from it, we can determine the rate of lethality. The problem is, right now in the United States, we don't know how many people have it because we have an acute shortage of viral test kits available to test people.
And why is that?
Why is that? Because the United States health apparatus was woefully unprepared to tackle an epidemic like this. After the outbreak of the H1N1 virus in the Obama administration, he did a couple of things. He created a pandemic response team within the Centers for Disease Control to prepare the country and put it on a footing to deal with something like this again. Wait a minute. And he also placed epidemiologists on the National Security Council.
And what happened to that? What happened to that?
Trump fired the pandemic response team and removed the epidemiologists from the National Security Council.
Why did he do that?
That's a very good question. Ostensibly, I think it was part of his cost-cutting measures, but those people who have paid attention to his entire presidency know that he has systematically tried to undo everything that his predecessor did, including the very sensible and smart things like having a pandemic response team, which makes sense in a nation of 300 some odd million people, wouldn't you say?
Oh, no.
No. So this is one of the reasons that we are unprepared. For example, for the swine flu outbreak that happened under Obama's administration, we were more or less ready. We were able to produce a large number of test kits so that we were easily able to identify how many people had this. We were able to figure out how lethal it was and how quickly it was spreading, all because we were better prepared to begin with. Now we are behind the curve, attempting to produce enough test kits to test people on a large scale. Meanwhile, this highly contagious pathogen is moving quickly from person to person. So we are unprepared, we are on the back foot, and we're going to have a lot more people sicken and die because of it.
And one of the things that makes this one so scary, ironically, is that you can be virtually asymptomatic and carry it.
Right, exactly. So all I'm saying is, this is not going to wipe out civilization as we know it. Probably capitalism is going to take care of that. But it's going to get worse before it gets better. So it really behooves you to take some of the basic precautions I was talking about before. And please visit the CDC website and learn more about what you can do to keep yourself and your family safe.
You know, I guess people are maybe getting bored. Oh, we don't want to hear about it. The fact of the matter is, this is a crisis potentially of enormous significance. It is almost a rival to the fact that the stock market is totally crashing. Almost.
Yeah, I would say it's worse because people are actually losing their lives over it.
As opposed to their money.
Yes. Right. For some people, there might not be much difference, but from where I'm sitting, there's a huge difference. Let's go back to the phone. Corey, you're next.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I'll be quick. My wife got sick around January 24th. She works in healthcare. She works at a hospital, one of the worst places to work. She got sick, gave me what she had, and so we went to the urgent care. They said we both didn't have the flu. We just had severe colds because I don't think that they were even diagnosing what it was at the time. So we don't know. We haven't gone back to the doctor. We think we both had it, but we're relatively healthy people. Mm-hmm. And as far as the symptoms, if we were told we didn't have the flu, but we had severe colds, and I'm like, I've had colds before. This doesn't feel like a cold.
Well, I don't know the difference, by the way.
Yeah, so I've had the flu, and the flu kind of takes me out. I've had colds, and I could still
function. See.
Right.
Yeah, this felt like something totally different because it was some flu-like symptoms, but it was the physical fatigue part. Like, I've never been in a situation where I'm a weightlifter. I couldn't get up and down the stairs for about 2 days. And so she actually spoke to her doctor, her PCP, yesterday. He's like, well, you know, we want to take some tests. It sounds like it, but we're not going to you come in. So we're both fine, but I just think that since they're not testing for it right now, we don't know what we had, but we know we didn't have the flu. And like I said, I have a cold. I've had colds all the time, but that wasn't a cold either. Mm-hmm. And like I said, she works in a hospital setting. The thing is, like, you know, how do you go back and diagnose? Our main concern is that, you know, we both have to travel. I have to travel to Canada next week. So, and like, you know, you said about the mask. The masks aren't for my protection, they're to protect other people. So,
right.
So I'm going to mask up, and you know, I got the Purell. I just think that I'm really concerned because it, from the top down, the leadership, as far as it's concerned, is sort of galling. I've also heard people say it's a hoax. I believe the lady on Fox News last night.
Yes, said she did.
This is a Democratic hoax. And I'm like, man, Democrats have a lot of power. We can't win the presidency, but we can create a virus to kill people.
Right. That's a can't give universal health care, but we're going to infect everybody.
Yeah, it's about population control, but we have the power to do that. But anyway, I just thought I'd let you guys know, like, I think the people that are asymptomatic, we don't know because the tests aren't out there, and I find that wholly irresponsible. But they've known about this since at least November, from what I understand.
Well, thank you very much. And I think what you're reporting is probably what a lot of people would be reporting, but maybe not calling us.
So you're going to be a mask foreigner roaming around Canada. Hope that goes well for you.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for the call. Bye-bye. 503-231-8187. Harry, good morning.
Greetings, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have two things to talk about. The first one is the last gentleman talked about the testing.
Uh-huh.
There's not enough kits.
No.
The government has given all 50 states kits, and so they have to kind of preserve them. Who do we use them for? Who they're not testing, which is very important, is dead people, people who have died recently.
Wait a minute, testing dead people?
Did they die of this?
I see what you mean.
Oh, you're talking about, like, autopsies.
Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, if these, like the nursing home, how would, when those people... in the nursing home in Washington, when they got sick, how do they know to test them for that? Because nursing homes, a lot of people die of the flu.
It's my understanding that the folks at the nursing home in Washington State were administered the test.
Yeah, they were. I mean, that which was lucky. If they weren't, they would have just died. And people who have died recently of had a cold or had a flu and then dropped dead, oh, he died of the flu. No one's testing these dead people. So it could be a lot more deaths from this virus.
It's possible.
Than reported.
But
and
I
the government likes this because, I mean, it doesn't look like it keeps the numbers down.
I have another question, which is probably silly, but it isn't. Why is Trump accusing the governor of Washington of being a snake? What's that about?
Oh, I don't know. Well, because that's the second point I'm going to bring. Thank you for bringing up the pandemic response team.
Uh-huh.
But because of that, and we also funded a pandemic response team in other countries. We had 30 other countries that we supported. When he cut that, he also cut that to 10 countries. And so the whole... he has to be blamed for everything, for not having this. Remember, the pandemic response team was the one who was contacted with the Ebola in Africa.
Right.
They're the ones who...
They were crucial in that case.
Yeah, they were crucial in that and getting a serum and getting, you know, and everything else. We don't have that now, you know. So until they redo it, So who made the cut? Who stopped? Who did this? Donald Trump. And hopefully the Democrats will take this and use it against them that, hey, it was his fault. And why did Fox and Trump all of a sudden say the Democrats are charging us with it? Because the Democrats haven't done anything about it because of the because the primaries and everything. No one's really have said anything. Go back 2 weeks ago when the stock market dropped on, it was a Friday.
Mm.
What was Trump's response? Oh, we made a deal with the Taliban. The next Monday, all of a sudden, the stock market shot up over 1,000 points. Even though we have no deal with the Taliban, the military operations are still going on. And they're still fighting each other. If we signed a treaty, that would stop all, would stop everything. I mean, it would stop all the fighting, but it didn't. It was just used for one purpose only, to bring the stock market up. And he did that 2 years ago when the stock market was going down. He said, oh, we're going to come with a peace treaty with the Taliban. It never happened, but the stock market went up. So he's doing all these type of things, and the Democrats have to actually put the whole blame of this on him.
Well, I won't get into the subtleties of that argument. I'm just going to say, yeah, you're probably right, and I'm going to try to move on to someone else, and I want to thank you for the call.
Yeah, thanks very much. I always like Harry's calls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to Mike. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, K-Boo.
Hey.
Yeah, just a question and first a little comment. I just want to encourage people. People get frustrated and give up on stuff if they don't see an end game.
Uh-huh.
And something to put in perspective, I don't know a lot, but I do understand this, talking to people and listening, is that there is a cycle, seasonal cycle to these flus usually. And we won't know how different this is than the regular flu until we go through all the seasons. So at most, our understanding is limited until, well, like after a year. So like this time next year, then we'll know.
Yeah, but remember that what we're it's not like, are we deciding whether or not people favor ice cream that's chocolate or vanilla? We're really talking about something that kills people who are older.
Right.
So that
ends up causing pneumonia and everything else. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it's a very serious infection.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually worse than the regular flu, they're saying.
Oh yeah.
That should encourage people to do the right thing now. But the other thing is I'm concerned about is people getting fatigue from it. Like, oh, this is never going to end. So why bother? So what I'm sharing is that there is sort of an end game after a year. Well, we will know more, and we'll know exactly what to do, and it'll be based on real knowledge and experience.
Only
to us.
Only if we get rid of the insane leadership.
Oh my gosh, that's a whole. Yeah. I mean, it's all related, of course. But
yeah.
Okay, so my question is, I haven't heard anyone get into the specifics of this test that is being distributed. That's being for quarantines and health workers and all that.
And that's where my knowledge ends. I couldn't tell you how that works.
I also do not have any real knowledge of the test.
Yeah.
All right. So throwing it out there, my question is this a general kind of flu type test for viruses,
or is it specific to this virus?
Made for coronavirus.
Yes. Specifically about coronavirus.
Yeah.
So it has to be created and made.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's
and manufactured.
The
problem. Yes. Okay. Wow, that's a problem. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, and thanks for the call.
By the way, it's not a problem if we really put our minds and efforts to it. But
it is still a problem.
To make the tests?
No, it's still a problem for us as a culture to cope with this.
Oh, of course.
And there's going to.
I didn't mean to imply that we solved it.
Okay. You're saying just this logistics of producing the test.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a question of getting up to speed. See, the thing with epidemics like this is that the early stages are critical. The faster you're able to act, the less damage it's going to do over the long term.
Right.
We squandered that early opportunity. So now it's going to be a lot worse than it might have been.
Right.
And that's where you can point the finger of blame squarely at Mr. Trump.
I think Americans generally are very unaware of the absolute necessity for simple things like hand washing.
Yeah, this is true. I've been a few places in public recently, and never have I seen more vigorous and aggressive hand washing than I've seen displayed. It was almost performative. Like, people, everyone seeing me wash my hands now? Here I go. This is good, right? And really, you're right. This is what should be happening all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it doesn't. So, and I also want people to bear in mind that there is a possibility we'll eventually have a vaccine for this. But this is a question of many months, if not at least a year.
Oh, it's at least a year. You have to test it on animals, then you have to test it on people, then you can release it.
Yeah, indeed. You have to worry about first about safety, then about efficacy, and then you've got to ramp up your production to a large enough scale that you can inoculate a large number of people. It's a process that takes a long time. So there's no immediate aid available in the form of a vaccine. We should bear that in mind. Let's take a little care of a little business, and we'll get back to this.
All right, business.
All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear from Jenny Brown, a National Women's Liberation Organizer and the author of Without Apology, The Abortion Struggle Now, and Birth Strike, The Hidden Fight Over Women's Work. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein features an extended interview with former Wall Street economist James Henry, now a fellow at Yale's Global Justice Program. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D-May speaks with Connie Carley, co-founder and managing director of Pass and Art, a theater company there on Interstate Avenue. They do some wonderful work in the Interstate Firehouse.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really a great place.
And discusses the company's growth and 38-year history. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Kristen Derryberry covers The Unknown Artist by Lucy Cotter at 511 Building. Arlene and Harold Schnitzer Center for Art and Design up now until April 18th. My inflection made that almost intelligible.
Yeah, that was really a bad job.
That was really a bad job. So tune in at 11:30 to find out more. All this and more coming up today on your listener-supported radio station, KBOO. All right, have we talked enough about the coronavirus and pandemics and such?
Well, we have a lot of callers. But yeah, I think enough is enough. But we can take their calls.
Okay, next up is Harvey. Good morning.
Hi, guys. Well, I've been doing some research, and mm-hmm. I think that I found some information that could help people avoid falling prey to the coronavirus. And I used to eat a lot of foods and beverages that contained a lot of refined sugar, especially high fructose corn mm-hmm. syrup. The problem was that I used to get colds all the time and spiraled into pneumonia 3 times, which nearly killed me. And at the time, I had a friend, a doctor, who told me that the simplest form of food for bacterium was the glucose molecule. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I went to my favorite search engine and I put in names of sugar into the search box. And it turns out that there's about 257 different names of sugar, sucrose, high fructose corn syrup, barley malt, dextrose, and so on and so forth. And about 75% of processed foods have contain sugar and chemical sweeteners. So I stopped eating and drinking the foods with fine sugar, and occasionally I'll eat a ripe banana or an apple, but they don't seem to bother me. And now I don't catch colds anymore. I don't catch flu. I haven't had pneumonia since then. I don't get toothache. So on a hunch, I went back to the research engine, and it says, "Does eating sugar feed viruses as well as bacterium?" And the quote was, "Bacterium and viruses thrive on sugar. It's their only source of energy." So I did a search of the colds or viruses. Are colds a virus or a bacteria? And the answer was that bacteria cause different types of infections. For example, bacteria infections, you get the whooping cough, the strep throat, ear infections, urinary. Viral infections include the common cold, flu, mm-hmm. most coughs, bronchitis, chickenpox. So I think that that since sugar feeds viruses, if one abstains from eating all the refined sugars, then there's a good chance that your immune system can overcome it. But it turns
All right, thank you for the call. I want to make one thing very, very clear.
Yes.
All right? Neither Joe nor myself is a medical professional or a public health professional.
But we play one on the radio.
We are not qualified to give medical or public health advice beyond that which is made available to us by people who know about such things. So I'm going to say this about what the caller just said. Is it a good idea to moderate your sugar intake on general principles? Yes, it is. Is it a good idea to moderate your sugar intake at a time of a viral epidemic? Probably. But eliminating sugar from your diet is not going to inoculate you or immunize you from contracting the coronavirus. I want to be extra crystal clear about that.
I think it's actually dangerous to suggest that a food, however common it is, can, by eliminating it, you can eliminate the danger of the virus. That's misunderstanding.
Here's what I'm prepared to endorse regarding that call. Is it a good idea to eat a healthy diet in order to boost your immune system and fight off infection? Yes. Is a healthy diet a guarantee against the coronavirus or any other form of viral or bacteria pathogens? No. No, it is not. So, yes, please do eat healthily, but don't think that's going to be enough.
You know, I have to say this. There's a lot of magical thinking among people who otherwise are science-oriented. And this is something I've been noticing over the years, and I have to say that to a great extent it came out of the quasi-mysticism, because I don't think it really is mystical, of the 1960s.
You think so?
I think so.
Damn hippies.
Yeah, damn hippies.
Eating healthy is a good idea. I recommend it as a regular practice. but it's not going to protect you from the coronavirus. All right. Who's Pear? Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
You know, we know now that this virus is killing a lot of people in Iran, yet we still have sanctions against Iran. Wouldn't you consider that a kind of crime against humanity?
I don't know if that meets the definition of a crime against humanity, but I will say this. If we had something approaching reasonable, rational leadership in this country, we would be looking to help the people of Iran in any way we could, you know, sanctions or no.
Well, it would help. It would help not only help Iran, it would ease the tensions that are going on right now.
Right. See, the thing about viruses, infectious pathogens, is they know no borders. They know no political affiliation. We're all in this together. So it would behoove us to not only move to protect our own population, but to help out anywhere else that we are able.
Yeah. You know, there was a folk song back in the long time ago, which about the Civil War. The cannonball don't pay no mind to whether you're good or whether you're kind.
So true.
Yes.
Yeah, bear that in mind as you see cannonballs arcing through the sky. Per, go ahead. Please continue.
Well, it just seems to me like, well, I said, whatever you want to call it, this is a dirty, rotten thing to do when people are dying to withhold economic assistance or just ordinary commerce, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, the sanctions against Iran, they started before Trump, but Trump has got a particular grudge against Iran. But, you know, going to... getting at dumping the nuclear treaty, which he did solely because he's got a grudge against Obama.
Our engineer just informs us that medical supplies are among the sanctioned items that we can't exchange with Iran. So, yeah, you're right. You're right. Our political stance against Iran is helping to propagate this epidemic there.
Oh, we don't have time, and probably nobody really wants me to discuss the history of American-Iranian relations.
Right.
It goes back way back.
But listen, Per, thank you for the call, and you make a very important point. Now's the time to look past international and political rivalries and start extending help because we're all human beings here, right?
Well, it's an opportunity to open up a whole new period of cooperation and ease tensions and perhaps turn us away from being a warrior state.
Yeah, perhaps.
Perhaps.
Let's go to Joe. Hello? Hello? Are you there?
This is Larry.
Oh, Larry. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
That's all right. Hey, I'll just make one comment. I think that the premise that the neoliberal, especially Republican version of neoliberal economics, the premise that it cares about life and death and wants to take is totally wrong. I don't think the Wilbur Rosses, the Ben Carsons, and the Pences, if you want to save yourself, you don't look to government, you look to God. And government is not going to be there. And I think this is exactly their look at what happened with Puerto Rico. Look at Bush with Katrina. They want to sit back and just let it happen. Keep all that money for themselves. Who knows what Trump's going to do with his $8 billion to the CDC? He'll probably use it to build a damn wall. Anyway, I think the premise that the current government wants to save and protect lives is wrong. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for
the call,
man. I think the comparison to Katrina is pretty apt.
I think it's so.
That was a case of malign neglect also.
Oh, I there's so many examples of stupid and missed opportunities.
Yeah.
And with particularly with this insane guy, I think we have to say this as often as we can. This crazy man who did not win the election, but because of a peculiar aspect of the Constitution, got himself elected president of the United States and now threatens all of us.
That's not a peculiar aspect of the Constitution. It's been there since the beginning. And he did win the election. I think we need to be honest about that.
Well, I don't
he
think
won the election.
Because of the rule that allows... All we need to do,
I know what you're saying, but he won according to the rules that we have in play.
All we have to do is have the states agree one by one to give the electoral college votes of that state to the winner of the contest in that state.
That's happening, actually. It's something called the Interstate Electoral Compact.
Right.
That is catching on in more and more states.
Yeah, but, makes sense.
But we digress. Let's go back to the phones. Joe, good morning. Good morning. You're there. Good morning. Joe, hello. No.
Hello?
Are you there? Hello.
This is Brian.
Brian.
Okay, go with Brian. Brian, you're on the air.
We don't know who we're talking to today. Go ahead.
Don't call me Joe, for God's sake.
What's
on
your mind?
Hey, wait a minute.
No, nothing personal. Sorry. No. I was just calling about that call a while back that somebody called in about sugar and its effect on health. And I just wanted to kind of clarify. I wanted to come in and defend him. I didn't get the impression he was saying that not eating sugar was going to save you from...
No, I think he was sincere, and no, I think he was partially right.
Well, I think he was very right, and what he was trying to say was that here's another a tool in the toolbox. You know, avoid sugar could help you
Agreed.
In some way, and I think that it is magical thinking to think that the modern processed diet with sugars doesn't harm you and could possibly make you more prone to it. So I think that's what he's trying to say. But you kind of alluded to that maybe he was using magical thinking, and nothing seemed magical to me what he was saying.
No, I agree with you, and I think he's right as far as that goes. But it would be irresponsible for me as the host of this program to not say what I said, which was that, yes, please do eat healthily, avoid sugars. That makes your immune system stronger in general, but it is no guarantee against infection by the coronavirus.
Yeah, but it could be yes. a big help, and then certain people could be a really big help.
It certainly
yeah.
could, yes. But yeah, I think you understand you, why I needed to say what I said.
Yeah, very good. Just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Besides, I like orange juice.
Oh, yeah, who doesn't? All right, Joe, good morning.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So as a former biochemist, long story anyway, I've known for a long time vinegar is good for all kinds of things, from jock itch to athlete's foot and everything else. I recently discovered in the last year that inhaling vinegar fumes instantly liquefies all your throat and chest and sinus conduit. Inhale through the mouth, exhale through the nose. Your head is clear.
You know what? I'm going to stop you. We're not going to propagate this sort of health advice on this program.
Well, okay? What if he's right?
I don't know. I have no way of verifying whether or not he's right. Again, I'm not a medical professional, so I'm not comfortable with inhale vinegar fumes going out over the airwaves. I'm not comfortable with passing on that advice. Joe, my apologies to you.
Smells bad.
Yeah, but we're not going to go there.
Okay.
Jeremy, you're next. Good morning.
Yeah. Trump was not elected. You're ignoring voter suppression. The Republicans haven't... I mean, I don't really think the world would be massively better, except maybe with this last one. But, the abolishing the Electoral College obviously would have solved that one. But if they would stop repressing voters...
Well, right.
Repressing voters...
But you're suggesting we're ignoring that when we've devoted many hours of this program to talking about that problem.
I just, it's just, when NPR says something like that, well, he was elected president. He wasn't elected president. He stole it. And the Electoral College would have solved that, but for some reason they can't seem to figure out what to do about that. But voter suppression seems to be something that at least you guys should acknowledge.
Thank you for the call.
I thank you for the call. I want to say something here, which is bothering me a little bit. I'm not hearing from any women today.
That's very true, indeed.
And I'm wondering, is it something we're doing?
I just think we're just off-putting, you and I.
Rude.
Yeah, sexist. Something like that.
Something like okay. that.
But with regard to what Jeremy said, let me state clearly and unequivocally that voter suppression is a terrible and ongoing problem. It continues to propagate, and it's something we absolutely need to address and maintain our vigilance about. And was it a factor in the last presidential election? It absolutely, without a doubt, was. All right. Let's go to... I'm sorry. let's go to Oliver.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to chime in a little bit and push back a little bit if I could.
Okay. Sure.
And I love to do that with you guys.
Uh-huh.
But I'm being
it's kind of a weird hobby.
Well, yeah, Joe, I follow wherever you're going, whatever you're doing. That's what I do.
That's sweet. Like Go ahead.
But different. It's different, but like love. No, but I just want to push back. You know what? This corona hysteria reminds me a lot of Russiagate and the Russiagate hoax. And the reason that, people are kind of pushing back and you're hearing this, this is Democrat, blah, 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 it's because of that Russiagate hoax. And the corona is being weaponized against Trump by the establishment hacks that are somehow trying to say, now, look, first, Trump is the one that came out and said, we're going to secure the borders. Everybody came out and said, you're racist against China. But nobody gives him credit for that, right?
Well, are no, wait.
Jerking our chains right now?
I'm not quite following your logic here.
I'm talking fast. But before you cut me off, though, let me say one more thing.
Sure.
Is that nobody is testing the poor. You know, I mean, this when it comes down to...
What, you want to have a war on the poor? What's going on here?
No, I'm just saying, you know, and then one of the callers came in, he said, you know, we should be testing dead people. And that is actually brilliant. I've been thinking the same thing, and it's been on my mind that nobody is testing the poor. These poor folks are... We got 5,000 people around Portland in tents. You think anybody cares that they've got an influenza B that's taking them out? The numbers on influenza B, we've got 30,000 people dead and hundreds of children dead this season since October. My daughter and I recovered from influenza.
Now, so I'm not cutting you off. I'm just muting you for a second here. I'm wondering, where exactly are you going with this here? The fact that we're talking about the coronavirus doesn't downplay the risk of influenza, nor does it make that disease any less serious or vice versa. This is another problem we have to deal with. Influenza is a serious problem that kills a lot of Americans every year. That's why people are encouraged to get flu shots every year. That's why people are encouraged to follow social isolation protocols when they're symptomatic. It's a huge problem, and I'm not sure why you're invoking it in this context, because it really doesn't have any bearing on the coronavirus discussion.
Well, let me unpack it a little bit, and I'm just referring to the mainstream media hype of this corona. This is not a pandemic like the bubonic plague that's killing everybody around the world. This is
killing people around the world.
Coronavirus has been around for 100 years. Corona is a cold.
This is a novel corona. You know what novel means in this contest?
New.
It means
it's new.
New.
Yes. Novel means new. It's new, and that's kind of suspicious, isn't it? But let's not go there. I'm just saying.
Okay, we're done here.
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of agree with you. There's all these weird tendencies toward conspiracy to explain the natural course of a weird world we live in.
Right, but the Russiagate is a hoax, and now the virus is being weaponized against Trump. That is pure nonsense.
I wish it were true. Could just get Trump with it. What did I say?
I don't know. Let's go to Ross. Good morning.
Well,
need your help, Ross, desperately. Yeah,
well, you know what? I'm going to help you in a really big way. I am scared to death of this coronavirus because I'm really getting older, and my wife is older than I am, God bless her. And so we all got to look out, and we all have to go sometime, and this may be one way. But people are we should take advantage of this great world of catastrophe to note how we're responding. And that the economy has sagged in very important ways, and that consumption has sagged. And I'm thinking that the environmental impact of this disease is very positive. It's reducing all kinds of stupid factory output. There's less shipping going across. There are fewer people in airplanes. Listen, the environmentalists have wanted to accomplish this for a long time, but the coronavirus...
You're just being ironic, aren't you?
No, we should understand that there's a tremendous positive impact on the environment, you know, of this.
So the Great Depression was good?
I bet you could calculate lives saved by the amount of reduction in production. And so that this is an example of what we should be responding to the threat of our catastrophe of the end of life on the planet. We should be reducing production. We should be reducing airfare.
Well, by that logic,
reducing air travel.
By that logic, if you cut everybody's hand off, we'd really reduce a lot of problems.
Well, I don't think you're catching the understanding. Listen, our system is a suicide system. When the economy goes up, it's bad for the economy. When the economy goes down, it's good for the environment. And just like back
well,
in the
that's
day
an, that's we an had, interesting point.
Yes, anyway, that's the point.
Thanks for the call. if only it were true. Business Insider reports that because of European air travel regulations, air carriers have to run their scheduled flights or risk losing their slots at various airports.
That's funny.
So right now, around Europe, airlines are flying what they're calling ghost planes, which are empty planes, from place to place so that they may, they're able to retain those slots at the airport.
Could I book like really cheap seats on a ghost plane?
I have no idea, but
I kind of think it's a good time to visit Italy.
Oh boy. Yeah, you know things are bad when the Italians call off soccer matches.
Really?
Yeah, things are really bad. No, so, but yeah, there are empty planes flying around, which I imagine is probably eating up quite a bit of those environmental gains that we may have stumbled upon because of this outbreak.
Well, what are war planes if not empty planes?
Right, right. Okay. So we didn't get to any of the other stuff we wanted to talk about today.
What is the stuff?
There's an election going on.
Oh.
There's a big primary today that will probably determine whether or not Bernie Sanders still has a chance at becoming the Democratic nominee.
I've gotten a little angry at Bernie lately.
Have you? Why?
Yeah. Because he says things that are not quite lies, but not quite true.
For example?
Oh, I don't want to spend time on it. It's a topic that's worthy of a whole show.
Okay.
But it's disturbing me. It's a kind of a quality of exaggeration, and I have to say of a little bit of paranoia.
Hmm.
And I'll talk about it another time. If you're asking, is Bernie a worthy candidate? Well, yes. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm just a little disappointed in what's been happening.
Okay. Well, I think this is something we are going to need to talk about at more length.
I think we will after we see what happens today.
Yes. And it's becoming, in my opinion, as her candidacy recedes in the distance, Elizabeth Warren was a magnificent presidential candidate.
Elizabeth Warren
has my vote
anyway.
And we will probably not see her like anytime soon. And I think the fact that she's out of the race represents an enormous missed opportunity. And I'm sure I'm going to hear about it from Bernie supporters for saying that.
Well, you know, they get mean.
Yeah, they do.
Some of them.
Yeah. But I wish she were still part of this process.
Well, yeah, me too. I thought she had the most rational approach to, for example, healthcare issue and a lot of other issues. She really displayed all the good qualities of a thoughtful intellectual.
Yep, agreed. Don't you want somebody who's got a plan for everything?
Well, I do. That's a funny...
I do.
Sure, yeah.
I think we have time for one more phone call. Let's go to Robbie.
Hey, I just wanted to bring up, there was 10% of the votes were not counted in the Texas primary. There's four thumb drives. There's a lawsuit. The judge is going to be determining this morning. Actually, I think it's happening right about now. The only news that's reporting it is local station news, just like how Iowa's re-canvass wasn't reported by the Associated Press to declare a winner. But also, you just mentioned Warren, and Warren wasn't for Medicare for All.
No, she was wanting to do a very technically sophisticated transitional approach that allowed people to make choices.
Yeah, well, I can't afford that. So that's why I don't know. I mean, I think the majority of people are on board for Medicare for All, which is the more practical approach to it instead of letting private insurers kind of do that.
Poll data, to the extent it can be trusted, says otherwise.
But I want to add to that, it's really not even logical to use poll data. We're all victims of enormous degrees of propaganda by the establishment.
So the poll that you suggested is wrong then?
No, I'm not suggesting anything about right and wrong. I'm saying that things are tainted to a very great degree by capitalism.
Got it. Well, yeah, I just wanted to let people know because the news doesn't seem to be talking about Texas, basically how the DNC is rigging another primary. South Carolina, there was polling stations closed. Iowa, I don't know. It's just a shame that we kind of have this idea that we have this vote in the primary, but yet it's getting swept under the rug. Like in February 27th was when Iowa released the re-canvass results, and there were still discrepancies. There's still problems. So many discrepancies that the Associated Press refused to announce a winner, and nobody cares about that. I don't know why we can't focus on this election rigging going on.
I think you're making a good point. We don't, unfortunately, have a chance to explore it. We've run out of time. The main thing I want to say to people is wash your hands and then do it again.
Yep. And if you're feeling bad, stay home.
And go to the doctor. Don't take a no for an answer when you want to have a test.
With that, presuming testing kits are available.
Presuming, of course. A lot.
Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back at you next week with, whatever's in flames at that time. Until then, this has been the Ava Joe Talk Radio Program.
Bye. From those Nads, Tiananmen's.
square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the...
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next on an alternative radio, we hear from Jenny Brown, a National Women's Liberation organizer and the author of Without Apology, The Abortion Struggle Now, as well as Birth Strike, The Hidden Fight Over Women's Work.
KBOO is hiring. We're currently accepting applications for our volunteer and outreach coordinator position. We're looking for someone with experience in volunteer management and outreach to diverse communities and preferably has experience with nonprofits. This is a full-time position. For the full job description and instructions on how to apply, see the job listing on our website at kboo.fm/employment. Applications are due Saturday, March 22nd by 5 p.m. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The events committee meets the third Monday of every month at 5 o'clock p.m.
Reversing our declining birth rate does serve an economic goal. An ever-expanding workforce raised with a minimum of public spending and a maximum of women's unpaid work. Why would employers pay for parental leave if they can get away with not providing it? And why would corporations pay taxes for a national child care system if families can be induced to take that burden upon themselves? But women and all parents are refusing, as our lowest ever birth rate demonstrates, and that gives us some leverage. As the birth rate goes down, the value of our unpaid labor raising successive generations can be seen more clearly by everyone. So we think it's time to bring the battle out into the open and raise some demands. What's a strike without demands, after all?